Yes, welcome back to Wednesday's edition of World Football Daily. We are six-sided all day today, the hexagonal round kicking off, and I'm delighted to be joined now by a man very close to the World Football Daily viewers' hearts, Mr. Juan Arango from Mad About Football, the podcast available on www.worldfootballdaily.com, is joining me on the line right now. Juan, how are you doing, man? You said you've been kind of pissing people off recently.
No, well, I guess I am. Yeah, I got a lot of crap from people. Not crap, but you know, a lot of insight from people about the show that we just recorded last night with George, with Mike. You're well aware of them, of course, with Chris Bandy as well. You know, it was a really in depth. I mean, it would last at about an hour and 40 minutes. Imagine how long it took for us to really delve into everything that's been going on as far as racism is concerned. And we talked about the Boateng situation, talked, of course, what happened to Jozy Altidore, talked about, you know, people criticizing one or the other, how they reacted. And honestly, there's really no one way to behave in those types of situations. And most of the people that were criticizing them had really never endured and really never gone through what those players have gone through on the field, off the field, etc. So, I mean, to go out and criticize somebody for handling it in one way or the other, in my opinion, both of them handled it in a very proper manner, different as it may be, but they still handled it in a way that in the moment, I really didn't have any qualms about it.
Especially with Boateng, I think that made a lot of sense, just removing himself from the situation, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing that the team was losing. It was a friendly. Let me get out of there, man. It's not even worth it.
Yeah,
you know, Jozy, in the meantime, he handled it well, as you know, too. I mean, you can't go one way or the other and really start pointing fingers. Say, oh, you know, I would have done this. I would not. No, you wouldn't have. If you understand what those players have gone through, if you understand what other players have gone through as well, you know, the Samuel Eto'os and the Dani Alves, the Carlos Khamenis, et cetera, not just only in Western Europe, but also in Eastern Europe as well, you can't really debate and you really can't argue with them as far as how they handle certain things.
Did you talk about the Danny Rose incident where he was sent off for kicking the ball into the crowd after there was the kerfuffle during the England Under-21 game back in October, I think it was.
We briefly went into it, but it was a similar situation than Boateng's, although there was more at stake in that particular match. But I mean, there's really, I can't really go and criticize that, you know. Also, think about it, it's a 19, 20, 21 year old kid that's facing the situation. It's quite overwhelming, and you know, it's easy for you and me to go out and say, you know, I would have handled it differently. No, we wouldn't have. We would have done it in a completely different manner. We probably would have gone and probably done one worse. I know if it would have happened to me, I would have probably jumped in the stands and tried to kick someone ass.
Yeah,
that's just me. But
you're a scrapper, Wen. You're a scrapper. And to be honest, I don't think there's any way that you can say, as you say, you can't judge it until you've really been kind of put in that situation. And if there's any reason to get really hacked off and do something like kick a ball into the stands or something like that, surely that is one of the few reasons which should be a justified one.
I mean, for me, honestly, I mean, you know. Let Sepp Blatter tell me that when he doesn't get served in a restaurant or he has to, you know, an indoor monkey chance or something like that. You know, if Sepp Blatter wants to tell me that and he's already gone through that, well, fine, okay. But he can never tell me or never tell anyone, Kevin Prince Boateng or any of the other players that have endured racism, to come and tell me as an individual or us as a collective to tell me, oh, you know, I understand. No, you don't.
And that's this is all available on the Mad About Football podcast from this week. That's right, Ryan? When?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And you can download that at www.worldfootballdaily.com. It is, of course, hexagonal time as well, though, Juan. And we've been focusing a lot on the US against Honduras. I want to get into a little bit of Mexico as well, though. Taking on Jamaica. Jamaica, a really improved side over the last few years. We've seen them grow from strength to strength. Will Mexico be worried at all? They're at home in the Azteca. This should still be an easier win for them.
Yeah. No. I think Mexico will go through. I mean, honestly, I don't even see what the big deal is. Mexico qualified to the World Cup, as will the U.S. I mean, there's just no two ways about it.
But is there any aspect of Jamaica that
they should get through?
Is there any point at all where Mexico should be worried? What are the weaknesses that Jamaica could try and exploit tonight?
No, they just match up faster with speed. They match up with size. Mexico, though, a much more technical side. Also, remember the altitude issue with Mexico City. That's going to be – we'll see how Jamaica ends up adapting to that situation. But you have a coach in Theo Whitmore that can look to be able to get a statement, because remember, Jamaica did not qualify for the Gold Cup. They ended up getting eliminated in the Digicel Cup or the Caribbean Cup this past December, thinking that all they had to do was throw their shirts into the fray, and all of a sudden they got knocked out of the group stage. That's quite embarrassing. And now this team's looking for a little bit of redemption. So that's something that really needs to be looked at as far as Mexico. Of course, Mexico and Chepo de la Torre already mentioned that he's definitely not going to underestimate the Jamaican side, even the match being played at Azteca. And to me, Mexico win 2-0, 3-1, something like that.
You're predicting it to be very comfortable indeed then. Who do you see being the major impact players for Mexico tonight? Because there's obviously the boys that play in Europe, but there's plenty of this Mexico side is obviously based up of players that play in the Mexican League.
Oh, well, you could start looking at players such as Oribe Peralta. He'd probably be a player to look at. I mean, really, Mexico as a whole really have looked very, very good for the past couple of seasons. Chepo de la Torre has been a very stable coach. It's been more that than anything else, the stability that Mexico have within the coaching ranks. There really hasn't been much drama going on as far as, save for the Carlos Vela situation. Really, you see a team that knows what they have to play, know how to play it, and are slowly trying to bring in pieces to the puzzle. So, I mean, really, Mexico, I honestly see them as the creme de la creme of CONCACAF by far.
There's three spots available then. If you're giving Mexico and the United States these top two spots or two of the automatic spots, who goes through with them? Honduras, Panama, Costa Rica, or Jamaica?
I would honestly think, and having seen Honduras during the Central American Cup, that's another thing. Really, Honduras did not get into proper form. Of course, Carlo Cosley coming back. Carlo Cosley is going to be a big question mark. Last week on the show, we had Carmen Boquin on, and she was mentioning that. How is Carlo Cosley? He's had some continuity. I mean, just at this time last year, Carlo Cosley was playing at an adult league championship here in Miami. Carlo Cosse was playing Copa Latina down here in Miami, and now he's playing over in Greece. Now, how much continuity has he gotten? Well, he's been able to get some, but is he going to be able to be a major contributor when the time comes alongside Jerry Benston? Maybe. I don't know. But he's the type of player, and I'm just basing it on what Carmen was telling me on the show the other day, was that when it comes time for him to produce, he will produce. So, I mean, the jury's still out on that, but based on his past performances, he could do that. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what he can offer. Honduras, to me, would probably be, based on how they got into the hexagonal, could be the first team, not by much. Costa Rica's another team. They were talking about Patrick Pemberton being removed and Keylor Navas, who rarely plays in Spain, being the starter. And I don't think that will help the team chemistry. We'll see how that happens if Keylor Navas ends up being the goalkeeper. But Pemberton is coming. He was probably the best goalkeeper, save for Woodrow Wilson of Belize in the Central American Cup. So Pemberton should stay in goal. But we have to see how consistent Costa Rica are as well. Panama, that's another team that I could see. Jamaica might really cause some complications. I don't personally see them getting that third spot. Maybe it'll be a three-team fight for that fourth and final position.
That Costa Rica side, especially that's been picked for the games tonight against Panama, it's a very strong side with a lot of talent from around Europe and of course, some talent from America as well. When you look at this Costa Rica side, how does it compare to Costa Rica sides from the past, and especially the one that was at the 2002 World Cup, wasn't it?
Well, you did have the veteran presence, of course. Walter Centeno was the pretty much the brains and the metronome in the middle. Now you have Celso Borges, which is Alexander Guimarães' son, who's really been the center of attention on this team. He's been the one that's been able to set up. He's the one that pretty much slows the pace, speeds it up a bit, and have to see how the play ends up filtering around him. If he's disappearing, Costa Rica have no chance. And remember, they're going to have a very tough time. Panama's already set up a really tough environment for them. Romel Hernandez is not a very easy place to play. And you're forgetting about Panama, too. They have a generation of players that are looking to get to the World Cup for the first time. You have the Blas Perez and the Felipe Baloyes and the Roman Martinez that are the the young veterans, should I say, that are looking to get things done. Also, Blas Perez and Miguel Tejada up top. That's going to be interesting too, because you do have a team that has a very uncanny combination of physical strength and a great deal of technicality. But the problem is that they tend to not be able to bring it together all at once. And when they do, it can be a very interesting set of circumstances for any team.
Now, obviously, at the very end of the hexagonal round one, we've got the playoff against the side from the Oceania World Cup qualification group. Mm-hmm. Comparing these two, the CONCACAF and Oceania World Cup qualification sides, who's got a stronger kind of continent at the moment for football? Because Oceania's there and thereabouts. We've seen the growth of New Zealand football, Australia football's getting obviously bigger as well, and sides are starting to impress a bit more from that area of the world.
Well, yeah, I mean, you see New Zealand, you see Tahiti as well, but I mean, Australia left the Confederation for a reason, and you're starting to see some of the benefits. Maybe not at the youth level, but you're seeing them at the senior side as they've become a very competitive side within Asia. As far as overall, definitely, I would see CONCACAF in that perspective being a bit stronger, actually much stronger. From top to bottom, if you start looking at the qualification, the teams in the hexagonal compared to the top teams in Oceania, to me, it's more of a case of CONCACAF being in a much better position at this point.
Finally, Juan, on the hexagonal round and everything's going on, the United States taking on Honduras, we've seen some dire away form from the US. Is it important, is it essential that they start with a win, especially with the pressure mounting on Klinsmann?
You know, my dad had a saying, and it was always interesting, and I use them a lot when I'm talking to people, because they, at least, especially at my age now, they make a great deal of sense. So I was saying, good teams and great teams can always pull a game either out of their hat or out of their ass.
So what's the U.S. going to do tonight? Is it going to be pulled out of their hat or out of their behind?
Doesn't matter. It doesn't really matter. In the short term, people say, "Well, Klinsmann didn't do this or Klinsmann did that or whatever." But in the end, when the U.S. are in Brazil in 2014, nobody's going to remember how they got there.
That is true. That is true.
But it doesn't. I mean, remember how Brazil got to the World Cup in 2002? Barely. Well, now that Filipão is back, people are talking about, oh yeah, Brazil barely got out of South America, but yet they were able to win the World Cup. Nobody ends up remembering that in the long term. The U.S. fans are very hysterical. They're very knee jerk when it comes to reacting. They're a type of fan base that are always trying to micromanage every single minute of every single play and every single dribble in order to say, "Oh, we're gonna get this done, or we're great, or we're the worst." And that's one thing that I guess that they've been able to catch up with the rest of the world. They've been able to get to that point. But at the same time, they really forget that it's 10 matches. Honduras have never beaten them in San Pedro Sula, first of all. And the U.S. also have 5 matches here at home, which if they get 12 out of 15 points, they're well on their way. They got to try and find a way to get 7 more at least. 19 points will most likely get you in directly to the World Cup. So, I mean, to me, the U.S. is going to go to the World Cup, despite what you hear from the media and despite all the dangers that are going on in Honduras and the rest of South Central America and Mexico. Oh, no, man. No, they're going through, man. They're going to be in Brazil. No big deal.
Now, Juan, you've been focusing as well quite a lot on the African Nations Cup. I know you're watching the Nigeria-Mali game right now. Nigeria obviously cruising through to the final at this point with just a few moments left in that semi-final. But as an overall attraction, has the African Nations been at its peak this year, or do you think it's been lacking in compared to previous years of the tournament?
It's different to compare one tournament to the other. And, you know, I tend to not heed to my own advice because teams change. I mean, look what happened. You know, with Zambia, they get eliminated so quickly. You know, is it fair? Is it not fair? It's just a different set of circumstances. You know, teams react to different environments and teams react to different scenarios. And now that Zambia had the proverbial bullseye in their back, you know, they'd reacted differently. You know, it's funny that now no one's criticizing Stephen Keshi for his decision making. Nobody's talking bad about him, and I'm kind of happy. I had a chance to speak to him when he was down here in Miami, and you know, great guy, great football mind, and you know, to see him be able to turn what was, you know, if you take a trip back to 2010 and the chaos that Nigeria were during that 2010 World Cup, and after that. And to see the team now starting to gel together, starting to get together at the right time, to me, that's a great tribute to what Stephen Keshi's been able to do.
Is this Nigeria side the strongest side in the tournament left out of Burkina Faso, Ghana, and Nigeria? I mean, is this their African nations for the taking now?
It's theirs to lose, yeah. I mean, based on what I'm seeing today, yeah, it's theirs to lose. The one that really has to be, and I heard, and I'm probably stealing a line from one of the announcers, is what is, you know, Cote d'Ivoire thinking about right now, seeing how Nigeria are just cruising through the semifinal. And to me, yeah, they seem like the solid team. It took a while to get things started, but then again, it took a while for everyone to get things started with the goal shortage there was during the early stages of this tournament. But yeah, right now, Nigeria, and I could be wrong, but Nigeria right now are the team to beat. This tournament is theirs to lose.
You're a man of world football in general, Juan. As a growth in both kind of skill and quality as well as hype around it, how do you see African football developing at the moment? Has it stayed stagnant, do you think, or do you think it is getting better and better in quality?
You know what? I've asked that. You know what? I've asked that question more than analyze it, because to be quite fair, I do respect the opinions of guys like Gary L. Smith and Segun Ogdebi, those types of guys, and also Angela Sante. I asked them, hey, how do you see it? And then based on what they asked me or what they tell me, almost scored the second one there, Mali. To me, I see it growing. I see it growing. Maybe not at the pace that many people thought going into the World Cup in 2010, but it's still growing. And I have to see more from a coaching standpoint, from an organizational standpoint, because the players are there. The quality is definitely there in Africa. If you start looking, and I've always thrown this argument out, if you look at the European leagues and you take away the South American and the African players, how good would those leagues in Europe be, truly? And I always throw the African players in the mix because they're very influential in most, and I might even say all the leagues. So to be quite honest, yeah, there is the talent, there is the technical ability. Maybe the collective is getting there, and the tactical wherewithal, tactical know-how of the players is starting to get even better. But there's still a long ways to go, you know, compared to what the expectations were coming into 2010.
And joining Nigeria in the final, Juan, just last one, who's going to be joining them from the second semi-final today?
I think Ghana.
It's got to be, hasn't it? It's got to be.
So you know what? It would probably end up being Burkina Faso now that I said it.
Well, don't never doubt.
It always happens to me. So, I mean, you know, what can I do?
Never doubt yourself, Juan. Never doubt yourself. You're an
Man. Oh, no, dude. No. I do doubt myself. You know, man, I've lost so many bets. And you know, it could be Barcelona against the World Football Daily 11, and I'll probably bet Barcelona and I'll lose somehow. It's just a force of nature when it comes to me betting and making predictions that I always get it wrong. Hey, that's just the way it is.
If we can get that game set up, by the way, I'll be more than happy to take part and fly over and meet up with you guys and have a game against Barcelona. I'd be happy to be involved in that World Football Daily 11.
I'll take the video camera. I'll film. Don't worry.
Cheers, man. Juan, it's an absolute pleasure to have you back on the show once again, man. We're always having a good 15-20 minute chat with you and chatting all things football, mate. Mad About Football is coming up this week with Juan being very passionate about racism in football, and we'd love to get you back on the show later on, mate.
Sweet, man. I also got Matt Wall coming on in the next couple of days, too, to talk about, you know, different equipment. Of course, talk about Portugal's new kit, about the U.S. new kit, about the Dutch new kit, and you know, some boots that'll be kind of cool to have for people that really can't afford $250, $300 boots.
What do you think about the new US kit, by the way, the retro look?
You know what? Rafa just mentioned to it, and I have not seen it, and I'm actually gonna take a look, or if not, I'm gonna see if Matt can send me a couple of pictures, and I'll give you. I really don't know, man. So I really wouldn't be able to give you an opinion.
Juan, you're gonna have to go to World Football Daily's Twitter feed to check out the link that I was telling you about. But it looks very much like the old school, very simple. It's like a plain white shirt, blue like sleeve cuffs, and an old kind of centennial looking flag on our crest. So
kind of like like the 1950s one.
Yeah, I was gonna say something like you would see in the 50s or something like that. So
old school. TSC got it. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So Juice is kind of up on it. I don't mind it.
You know what, man? I don't mind it now that I look at it. I really don't, man. It looks kind of cool, man.
Yeah, if you're gonna go retro, one, I would say definitely do it the year before, the World Cup or as soon as things really start heating up, heading into the World Cup, because when you head into the World Cup, you gotta have the new fresh kind of steez, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, but you should have, you know what you should have put, or what they should have put instead of just this, have like one of Joe Gaetjen's grandkids wearing it. That would have been kind of cool.
Yeah.
Why not, man?
Man, I know what you're talking about. Well, anyways, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, man, but one thing that I forgot about Jamaica, man, especially with being Bob Marley's birthday, man, it's going to be, hopefully that helps out a little bit for him.
Hopefully they show up. Who knows? They might forget to the match after.
Oh no! Right now they got a lot of heat on them, especially after what happened in the Caribbean Cup. They got to show up. So we'll see how that happens.
All right, thanks, Juan.
All right, man. Talk to you guys later. Peace.
See you, Juan, mate. Juan Arango there, joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things hexagonal football. And, of course, it is going to be a huge night tonight in terms of World Cup qualifiers. Mexico taking on Jamaica in their first game of the hexagonal round. Costa Rica taking on Panama. I'm quite interested in this Costa Rica side, Raph. I'm not going to lie. Looking at it, you look at the squad.
I like Costa Rica. I think they can do the business, man.
Yeah, I think this is the side that's going to be joining USA and Mexico in terms of those automatic spots through to World Cup 2014. You look at it, Roy Miller from the New York Red Bulls. You've got Brian Oviedo from Everton. You've got, Joel Campbell, the youngster at Arsenal. Brian Ruiz, absolutely awesome player. I love Brian Ruiz. I don't think he gets enough credit at all. You've got the Portland Timbers, Rodney Wallace as well. Jerry Arrieta from the Crew. I mean, there's plenty of names that people that know and watch European and American soccer, football, whatever you want to call it, Raph, we'll be getting into that debate a little bit later as well. There's plenty of players that people will know and recognize the talent that they've got there as well. Costa Rica, not to be taken lightly at all, could easily be a stumbling block, I think, for the US if they go in there with a little bit of their heads kind of not screwed on properly. We're going to be talking all things USA Honduras when we come back here on the show. Jeff Carlisle is going to be joining us here, and we'll be looking at the US men's national team as they get ready and set just a few hours away from taking on their first game in the hexagonal round of 2013.